Hey everyone, quick update on the podcast. First off, this is the 1 year anniversary of A Lost Plot. If you've been listening this whole time, thank you so much for your support. I really appreciate it. All my guests really appreciate it. It's a wild time and we appreciate you guys tuning in. Second off, we are going to be changing up the pace of the podcast a little bit. So over the next couple months, you're going to be seeing instead of two podcasts a month, you should be seeing a podcast every week. Now, the pace is going to be the same. You're going to be seeing a podcast with an interview talking about some sort of movie every other week. But the weeks in between, we'll be discussing some sort of principle in regards to making good storylines and relating that to movies that we see today. If you like this content as it comes out, please feel free to reach out to us, give us a thumbs up, give us a thumbs down. Let us know how we're doing, how we can improve the content that we're releasing out here to make it better and more relevant to what you want to see. With that, let's get back to the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's Maverick Dixon here with our co-host of the day, our wonderful guest, Avalon. Hello.
Hello, hola, konnichiwa, and leho.
Classic. And we are here back for another classic ourselves. Today, we are reviewing a 2018 movie. You want to guess? I bet you do, because you saw the title when you clicked on this podcast. It's The Ant-Man and the Wasp, directed by Peyton Reed, written by Chris McKenna, Eric Summers, and Paul Rudd, Andrew Barrera, and Gabriel Ferrari. Nice last name. It's got Paul Rudd as Scott Lang, also known as Ant-Man. Evangeline Lilly as Hope Van Dyne, also known as the Wasp. Michael Pfeiffer as Michelle Pfeiffer. Dude, I'm just reading off this list right now. I'm going to be honest. I don't know Michelle Pfeiffer from anything else other than Ant-Man and the Wasp. But she plays Janet.
I mean, she is a famous actress. I think she's I don't know her name off the top of my head, like as far as movies, but I think she's in Prince of Egypt.
Okay. That's a notable one. I would give her great kudos for that. My childhood would say great things of her. Let's see. All right, we're gonna take this quick detour. Never do this, but you know, Scarface, Batman Returns, Grease 2, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Dangerous Minds, Murder on the Orient Express. There we go. That's a good one. Maleficent. Mm-hmm. Okay. Stardust. All right. Anyways, she's in this movie. And we have Michael Douglas. The good old Michael Douglas. He's playing Hank Pym again. Before we get into it, you all know the drill. Avalon, lay it on us. What is Ant-Man and the Wasp about?
So Ant-Man and the Wasp picks up from both the first Ant-Man movie and Captain America Civil War. It picks up with Scott Lang under house arrest because he took a deal took a plea deal so that he could be with his daughter and his family. Essentially, it means he had to be under house arrest for two years or something. And then he has to be under
this
on
goes
parole
back
for
to
3 years.
Right. For those of you, just as a quick aside, this goes back to, I believe it is the Avengers Age of Ultron, right? Or is this Avengers Civil War?
This is the Civil War. And it's Captain America Civil War, but essentially it's like because he helped Captain America, he was branded an outlaw because he didn't sign the Sokovia Accords. But he took a plea deal after being captured, after the events of Civil War, so he could be with his daughter and his family. So
gotcha. So there is a background, if you haven't watched those other movies, that plays into where he's at right now. Mm-hmm. But anyway, sorry, keep going.
Yeah. But also as a result of his actions, he exposed Hank Pym and Hope Van Dyne. And so then now they're on the run and in hiding. So Scott Lang's about to fulfill his 2 years under house arrest. He gets this vision of Janet, Hank Pym's wife, and he leaves in a phone call for Hank, not sure what it meant, and they kidnap him essentially because they realize he has the information to finding Janet in the quantum realm. So the rest of the movie is them trying to get Janet out of the quantum realm while also evading the feds, a shady under like black market dealer, and also a vengeful character who's blames Hank Pym for her problems. So
yes, for sure. So that's pretty good summary. I'd say probably one of the better summaries I've heard on this podcast.
Well, I forgot to twice.
Yeah. You forgot what?
I got to do it twice.
That's true. For you guys who are listening, this is unfortunately the second attempt at recording this. We did a whole podcast on this and realized we weren't recording. So here we are again.
I was going to put it nicer than that, but okay.
A wonderful and sad situation all at once where you guys get the refined version of Ant-Man and the Wasp. So they open it up. All right. Scott Lang is under house arrest, living the dream and, you know, almost happy, right? 3 days from being released as an opener, Avalon, what did you think?
Well, considering this is a sequel, it was a good opening scene to recenter us on Scott Lang and his life, to remind us who he was, what he's done, and how he's made changes. Because it's like he was a crook in the first movie. In this movie, he's actually trying to start a business, a security business for protecting people from crooks. Like, I guess what he used to do. So right. It's like he's making changes. He's trying to abide by the rules. But at the same time, he does, like, he has a whole Aunt May's he's created that for his daughter. So it's like he's referencing the fact that he used to be Ant-Man, even though he's not Ant-Man anymore. So, I mean, right. As far as an opening scene, it's a good, especially for a sequel, it assumes you already know some of these characters, and it's good at recentering us. Like, okay, this is the world we're in. This is what's happened. This is what's changed. And it takes off from there.
Yeah, definitely. No, especially because Paul Rudd's character, Scott Lang, and Ant-Man as a whole are a very... they definitely have their own personality, right? And that plays into how Ant-Man carries himself, how the movie is played out as a whole, you know, all that stuff. Making sure it has that feel is important. And they do very good at making sure that you get the Ant-Man feel, quote unquote, every time you watch an Ant-Man movie. So this movie was no different in that regard to the first one, right? You have the same feel to it. You know Scott Lang. You know how he's a fun-loving guy who likes to have fun whenever he can and tells his jokes and all that good stuff. So, yeah, I would say as an opener, they really didn't have anything that hurt the movie. In fact, if anything, they set it up for success. Things really get to a head, though, with Hope Van Dyne and... the whole incident with Scott Lang and that connection that you referenced earlier with the quantum realm. Right? In that situation, then, you have Scott Lang involved in the whole situation and then Hope Van Dyne going to the black market dealer and how that whole thing goes wrong, right? That whole engaging situation, from there, everything really kicks off. But in regards to getting everyone engaged in the plot, how do you feel like they did?
I'm sorry, repeat the question.
So, sorry, the situation is the whole, one, Scott Lang sending that phone call saying, hey, I connected with this lady from the quantum realm. I mean, he doesn't know it's the quantum realm at that time, but there's that whole connection, and then there's the connection between Hope and Sunny trying to do that black market deal, right?
those two situations as a whole is when both Scotland get connected to them and they get connected to the conflict, right? So yeah. It, as a scene that engages the audience and says, okay, this is now where the action picks up and this is where everything important is now established, right? Mm-hmm. How did you feel like they did?
I mean, I feel like they are too quick to jump the gun in some regards. Like the whole conflict between Sonny Birch and Hank Pym and the others, like it occurred to me this time watching it that, I mean, I don't know, like his plan to like just take the lab and sell it seems a little too premature. Like he doesn't even know what's the tech in there. Like if anything, right. It would make more sense for him to come to him and say, like, I want to come into business with you. I want to sell a tech. I want you to tell me what you have and we could make a lot of money together. Like, I feel like that would make more sense, especially with him being a black market dealer, because it's like, these people created the tech. Why not work with them to create more of the tech and sell more of it? Like, that would make more sense from a realistic point of view. And I was like, okay, this, from a storytelling perspective, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It feels like you're just creating stakes immediately without thinking about the implications.
Yeah. No, there was definitely that was honestly the big thing that stuck out to me about Sonny as a character, is that he really jumps the gun in regards to his black market connections and the people who want to buy this quantum technology or this this ability to research and access this quantum power. He doesn't know how it works. He doesn't know how far they are in regards to their research. He doesn't know if it's even technologically feasible at this point. Like, they're just buying components, especially. Mm-hmm. So if anything, that indicates not ready.
Yeah.
I mean, I would definitely agree with
that. The only thing in his defense. Yeah. The only thing in his defense is, I think he is right about, like, because he makes that whole speech about the quantum, like, quantum stuff being the technology being the new thing, like the new frontier for tech. Like, right. I think that speech was good.
What a joke.
Yeah. Sorry. Where it just like, but it's like, his whole like argument right there inside of itself isn't bad. Where he's like, this is the new technology. So him wanting to get in on it makes sense. But him wanting the lab doesn't make a whole lot of sense, logically speaking.
Right.
So,
right.
If he doesn't even know what's in there.
Right. Maybe something along the lines of, okay, trying to barter information or trying to know more about how the lab works would make a little more sense here at the very least. Would that lead to good conflict? Maybe, maybe not, but definitely would take longer for the plotline to pick up. So that's a whole other trade-off. Yeah. But in regards to pure logical standpoint, you have no idea what you're selling. So why are you trying to sell it right now? Doesn't make sense. But anyways, that's where they really pick things off or kick things off. That's where you're introduced to this character, Ghost. And they realize that they're outmatched and they need to figure out other stuff. So there's a whole lot that goes on between there. I was personally going to save some of that for the end, unless you had anything in particular you wanted to note. Now?
About the middle of the movie? Or just...
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the only thing... I think I said this, like, before, but it's just, like, the movie has too many plot lines, too many conflicts going at the same time. Where it's, like, it could have condensed some of it, and it would have made a better story. Like, condense it. I don't know if I gave any suggestions the first time we talked about this, but I think... If they had made Ghost a part of, like, say, Sonny Birch's group, like, if they had actually condensed her storyline with Sonny Birch, you would have condensed part of the story and given it more, I don't know, like, it would have made it more interesting on a certain level.
Or even connected to a buyer, right? Let's just say, hypothetically, that Ghost was connected to a buyer in the Marvel Universe, like... I don't know, and this is just purely hypothetical, but let's just say, like, Dr. Doom, right? Who, I don't know, he could easily have some interest in getting access to quantum technology.
Yeah.
So in that regard, one, you would just open up huge possibilities for storylines in the future in regards to bringing in other Marvel characters. But just purely having some sort of connection with Ghost to someone else beyond her own motive would have made her a more compelling character, in my opinion, making her what, a bounty hunter or a hired part of some sort of other espionage group or something like that. I don't know, but making her this lone wolf that she ended up being wasn't compelling. It just wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, they tried to give her that, like, problem. Like, she was, like, her, so the side effect of that experiment, like, her parents died. She now is phasing in and out of reality. And it's, like, her body is, like, hurting her because it's doing this. And she's dying slowly. I mean, they're trying to do something like that, but just... She also wasn't very consistent as a character. Like, was she evil? Was she good? Like, they kept flip-flopping a little bit on that.
Right.
But they, especially at the end, it was like, okay, you don't have a consistent character perspective here. You just have, like...
Right.
Like, you're trying to make a compelling character, but it feels like you didn't know what kind characteristics to focus on.
So. Right. Well, and I don't think that her backstory necessarily... I mean, I don't think it was great the way, at least the way they played it out, it wasn't great. But I don't think they even had to sacrifice that backstory without also having that other connection, right? I think she could have been connected to Sonny Birch or could have been connected to someone, to some other buyer. And still been...
especially with her backstory, because she's part of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a little bit and she's turned into an assassin, like that would have worked. Like, S.H.I.E.L.D. falls apart. She gets hired by Sonny Birch or by someone else, and she acts as this, like, secondary person on the line. And she has maybe an extra investment in this particular purchase because they're going to heal her with it, supposedly. Or look for a solution.
Or she, like, she's sent there and finds out about it, but decides to use it for her own good, right? Then she ends up compromising herself. You know, there are, in regards to her current buyer, sorry, if it, I'm trying not to... go too far along in this hypothetical scenario, but the point being is that gone the problems with her is that she didn't have great compelling storyline as it was by herself. Two is that you didn't need to spell out her storyline, and that more than most other things was a big no-no. The classic show-don't-tell was violated in a big way in this movie. And that, more than anything, is the thing that comes back to me anytime I watch something like this. It's that if you look at Ghost, right, this is why you don't have monologues. This is why you don't just put a monologue in a movie randomly to explain why someone exists. Does it help
add unless you make it comedic?
Yeah, unless you make it comedic, you have to have a good reason.
As in the case of Lewis. Like,
right. Okay, but that's a great example actually. Like Lewis, the reason he gave that background right when he was being questioned was because he had a truth serum, you know, and that was part of the joke. That was part of the bit. And that was also part of the actual functionality in the system. He had truth serum in him, so he was gonna tell the truth, right? But like,
and also he's done this before in the other movie, like long, complicated stories. So it's like, okay, he is gonna monologue because this is who he, what he does.
Exactly. He likes the spotlight. He loves the center of attention. So of course he's gonna talk. But for the bad person to tell the good people exactly what they're thinking, exactly what their backstory is, even though they're enemies, makes zero sense in any logical situation. So, so the fact that they would do something like this just shows what amateur writing was going into this. I'm sorry, but that's just a blatant flaw. Just don't do that. Okay, just don't do that. It's a problem. But they did it. So that's the big thing, is that once you just spell everything out word for word, there is no mystery behind the bad guy. You know exactly what they stand for, and it doesn't really make any sense. Why did they tell the good guys? We don't really know. And then also, her plot line in and of itself wasn't that convincing. It wasn't that compelling. She was going to die. Mm-hmm. Boo-hoo. She also was beating up good guys.
Like, you weren't given an emotional reason to invest in her. Not really.
Right. Right.
I mean, her parents died, but yeah.
That sounds, yeah, and it sounds harsh, like, oh man, we don't care that people died. But the way they spelled it out in this movie didn't make it a big deal. It was just like, this is what happened to me, so I hate you and I'm going to kill you now.
Yeah.
You know? That's not compelling. It wasn't. It's not.
It's almost like a spoiled child reaction.
Yeah, it was. She's a spoiled child. Do you think I care about a spoiled child trying to murder people? No. No. So, anyways, hopefully that spells out enough to explain why Ghost's backstory, one, shouldn't have been explained, and two, when it was explained, made the movie worse. But that's enough on that. Was kind of going to save that for later, but here we are. So, anyways. Did you have another point on that? I don't want to cut you off.
I'm not sure how far ahead you're going to jump, because I was going to talk about Bill Foster next.
Yeah, now would be a good time. Foster's another character right there. I felt like Ghost was the worst, but Foster is worthy of mention.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
They kind of giving some interesting backstory, like he used to work with Hank Pym, and they hate each other for some reason. But I don't know. Like, there was the way that the relationship happened, the way it interacted. I mean, you kind of get that. And maybe the first scene I could overlook maybe a little bit, because there are some interesting interactions there. But his son's betrayal later on in the movie doesn't make any sense. I mean, or makes barely any sense. Because he helps them, that they just to betray them, only to turn around and be like, and rebuke Ghost and be like, we shouldn't do this. And it's almost like, it's such a weird, like, he almost has an inconsistent personality too. Not as bad as Ghost, but because he's a little bit more consistent, but it's like, he has it too.
No, I would agree with that. Because Ghost is the biggest problem, it's easiest to look at her character. Foster's character too is not great. And part of that is because exactly what you said. He's not consistent. He doesn't have, I think the big thing for me is that he doesn't act how he says he feels. So he says he hates the guts of Hank Pym, right? But he acts pretty cordial. And if anything, chummy, especially after he's like, oh, I don't agree with Ghost. He's pretty buddy-buddy. Well, not 100%, but relatively speaking, he's pretty pro Hank Pym as soon as that happens.
He doesn't consistently hate Hank Pym. It's kind of the show don't tell rules.
It's a hate of convenience. Right. So it's like, listen, if you're going to create a character, those characters need to be consistent, right? How are they going to live their lives and say one thing but do another? Granted, that can be broken if they say one thing but do another, if you know that they don't actually think what they're saying. But if they say one thing and they believe one thing and they do something totally different, and you are not led to believe that they would do something different, that's confusing. So why do that? And so when you have these wishy-washy characters, it only confuses the plot line more. It leads to characters that you don't believe, that aren't compelling, because you don't think they're real. You don't think that they actually stand for what they say they stand for. And here we are.
They're essentially cardboard cutouts that move the story forward. It's not believable. They're like no better than robots, like acting out
right
a weird part in a story. So
right,
you can't.
Well, it's almost like it's like the character was created for the storyline rather than them creating the story. Mm-hmm. Does that difference make sense? Like storyline.
I'm convinced.
Needs to be driven by compelling characters
that, Bill Foster...
that are fully developed. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Sorry. There's a lag in the call, so I think I'm talking over you a little bit. Sorry. But I was just going to say, I'm convinced Bill Foster was almost put into this movie just because he's a Marvel comic character. Like, they're just wanting to introduce a cameo comic character for fan service, more or less. Like, you could probably take him out. And the movie would be better. I hate to say that because Lawrence Fishburne is a good actor, and I'm sure he has fans for the movies he's in. But unfortunately, I think for this movie, he could have been left out, and the movie would have been better.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I don't really think that he adds a lot to the movie other than explaining a little bit about how the quantum realm works for their purposes.
Yeah, which explains a little bit about the quantum realm stuff. Not much. He explains how they could find the lab. Like, he gives them the information, but it's also to kind of betray them and lead them to Ghost.
Right.
And like, even at like, and I guess he takes care of Ghost. Like, he's kind of for Ghost's backstory as well. That's all he's really there for.
Yeah. He didn't play an integral role, and the role he played was not compelling. So, ax him. That's my opinion. Ax him. I believe in ruthlessness, so we are trying to be ruthless today. And maybe I'm just in that mood. Today's one of those days. All right, so we're moving right along. We decided that Foster doesn't matter. We decided that Ghost sucks. And now we are looking at the worst moment in the movie, right? In regards to not actual worst in regards to rating, in regards to the
story.
The storyline. The saddest moment, right? Quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Pym and Hope are arrested by the FBI. Ava Starr takes the lab and Scott Lang goes home, right? All of that pretty much epitomizes everything that they wanted to happen isn't happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
In regards to like a worst scene, crap. Mm-hmm. We are being destroyed here. How do you feel about that scene?
I mean, it was interesting. I mean, the fact that, I mean, it did put Scott Lang in a position where it's like, yeah, he escaped. The FBI is none the wiser that he hasn't left his house. But he's left with guilt, realizing that Hank Pym and Hope are now in custody. And he now, and it's partly because of him. Like, it's his fault that this has happened.
Right.
And yeah. So, I mean, that part was interesting. I mean, it doesn't really feel like a bad moment, if that makes any sense. Like, it doesn't feel like a hugely, like, oh, this is so bad. I mean, admittedly, the movie is a comedy a little bit, so it's like it's harder to feel that way during a comedy in general. But this movie especially is like, well, it's not really, doesn't feel like a hugely bad moment necessarily. At least not in my opinion.
Sure. Well, one of the things that comes to mind for me, just watching this, right? They get arrested by the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who was arrested by the police in Ant-Man? Scott Lang. So this whole scene has basically been replayed in the first movie, and they're just rebringing it back in the second movie. So in regards to it being like, I don't want to say, well, you know what? I don't care, because I'm going to say whatever I'm going to say. If you really want everyone to think that things are at their worst for the heroes, you don't put them in a situation that you broke them out of in the first movie. Okay? Because no one's going to watch... No one's going to watch Ant-Man and the Wasp without first having watched Ant-Man. And in Ant-Man, they break him out of jail. So guess what's going to happen in Ant-Man and the Wasp, a.k.a. Ant-Man 2? They're going to break him out of jail. Like, it just doesn't make sense from a storytelling perspective to put them in this situation and then say, this is bad. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like you're just putting up fake barriers at this point. Saying, oh, okay, we're putting up a problem for the heroes that they have to overcome, but we know they can overcome it. That's not a barrier anymore. It's like like a comma in a sentence. Mm-hmm. You just pause for half a breath before you keep saying the rest of it. It's
not a new obstacle. Like, we've seen them overcome this obstacle before. And so it's like, okay, they're just going to get out the same way as before.
Right. And they do. Which is, okay, so how are you supposed to grow the characters? How are they supposed to be more compelling? How is this supposed to drive the story forward? It doesn't. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, to be perfectly frank, the only way it would have been different is if Hank Scotland didn't come back to get them out. Like, it would not have been the same scene. That would have been the only way it would have been different. It would have been interesting to see how they handle it this time, because they don't have the same things as last time. But no, they didn't do that. They went the same route. So,
nothing new there. So anyways, they escape, as predictable. And it all comes to a head at the fight at the lab at the dock in San Francisco. In regards to a climax, Avalon, please tell us, what is your opinion of the fight at the lab, at the dock, in San Francisco?
Like, the whole sequence that leads up to the dock and the fight itself?
Sure, I mean, if that helps add context.
Well, I'll say this. I'll just say the fight, like, the chase scene just before the fight, I enjoyed immensely. Like, especially the second time watching it, this is like, okay, this... Like, the first time you're just watching it is like, and I hated the movie. The second time I watched it, I'm like, okay, this chase scene is actually fun to watch, where it's like, you got this combination of, like, classic car chase, like, of a heist, where it's like, cars are being, like, going downtown, like, trying to avoid the pursuers. But then you also have the shrinking technology, where it's like, everything's getting shrunk, regrown, and they're using that to the effect of, like, fighting back against those who are chasing them. So it made the fight, I enjoyed the car chase scenes. And then you have Scott Lang's malfunctioning suit on top of that. So he's constantly like shrinking and growing in the midst of everything. And he can't control it. It's just happening sporadically. So it creates this really fun like car chase scene you don't see very often in other movies. So it's like, okay, I was able to enjoy that. I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
But once you get to the fight in the dock, and the fight, it's like the culmination of everything. Like, they're trying to save Janet, and Ghost is trying to drain Janet, like, trying to essentially kill her by draining her energy before she arrives. That part of it, I don't know. Like, it's like a classic fight scene between villain and heroes. And maybe you feel a little bit... I mean, it was okay. I don't want to say it's bad, but it wasn't great.
I'll say it's bad. It's bad. No. I feel like... No, I think some parts that you just said are definitely correct. I think that the car chase scene was pretty fun in its own way. Definitely Scott Lang's shrinking and growing could have been more compelling, especially... As a piece, it was fun. It was like an entertaining piece. But in regards to driving the story forward, it was a joke that you knew was quickly going to be overcome, right? And you never really felt like it was actually a barrier to the overall story. And so in that way, the movie fell short. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to keep going on Ghost. So overall, I mean, I would say for the most part, I'd agree with what you said. I don't think it drove the story forward, but I thought that the car chase scene was entertaining, and that the malfunctioning suit was entertaining. But at the end of the day, it wasn't like there was never a point, and maybe this is just going more into the broad overall understanding of the movie, right? But looking at the entire movie, there was never a time where I looked at any of the heroes and thought I was really concerned for what was going to happen to them, right? No one dies.
You're not really concerned about anything.
And that just means that no one suffers at the end. There was no sacrifice for the story goal. Sorry, but go ahead.
No, I agree. Like, there is definitely no sacrifice. There's like everything gets wrapped up in that neat little bow. Like, because especially with Janet, like, partly fixing ghosts and everything, it's like there's no, like, everyone kind of like goes a separate way at the end. I mean, aside from maybe Sonny Birch and the other guys, like, they get captured by the cops.
Right.
Other than that, there is one question, like, partial tangent. And I don't know why this happened to me when I was watching a movie, but did he ever like think Sonny Birch looked a lot like Matthew McConaughey?
Well, I think some of that has to do with more of the accent that he's playing, which was more of a Midwestern accent that goes along with some of the characters that Matthew McConaughey plays.
Well, he even had his hair like. Well, he even had his hair like him, and it's just like those few times I watched him, and my brain got like a little confused watching it a little bit. It's just like it's a reminder that it's not Matthew McConaughey. I can't say that I felt that, but
I could see where that's coming from. I mean, I like Matthew McConaughey, so that might be part of it. I'm a big fan. But Sonny Birch is a character. He's not super compelling in my opinion either. He's pretty two-dimensional. He has a lot of screen time for a bad guy. And so I thought he should have had more of a compelling motive or some sort of at least mystery around him, where he seemed pretty stock. He was like, I'm a guy who wants my money. I've got my dealers. I've got my bad thugs, you know. And that was pretty much it. I just didn't think that he had a lot going for how much screen time he had. He really should have had more developed as a character, and he just wasn't.
Yeah. I think we said this in our last conversation about this movie, but Sonny Birch is essentially no better developed than the bad guy in the first movie. What's his name?
Daryl.
Yeah, Daryl. Yeah, like it's
Daryl
like,
Cross or whatever. Darren.
Yeah, Darren Cross. He is like also pretty two-dimensional, pretty flat as a character. There's not much motivation for him. Not much given. You can't empathize with him very much. Same with Sonny Birch. It's like they're kind of cut from the same cloth, even though they're representing two different things. Like, there's not much to them.
Right. And so here's the thing. For a bad character, either one, you need to develop that idea of understanding, right? It's like it's like the bad guy, either one. So you develop this good guy, right? Mm-hmm. Good guy, quote unquote, right? So the protagonist, you either need to have them developed and you care about them, a good one. The bad one, the antagonist, you either, one, develop in a way that people can empathize and understand where they're coming from, but they go off the deep end, right? So it's like the good guy goes down the good path, the bad guy goes down the bad path, and you see which one ends up actually working. That's kind of the test, right? It's kind of an A-B litmus test, trying to figure out what works,
yeah,
in a way. Or you have the bad guy that's mysterious. You have the bad guy that you don't know where they came from, what they're doing, what their motives are, but they just seem just pure evil, or they just seem like pure darkness, or they just seem mm-hmm. like some other element about them is so mysterious that it's terrifying and compelling in its own way, right? And that's where you have characters like Sauron, like the Dark Riders of like the Witch King of Angmar, trying to think mm-hmm. of other ones right off the top of my head. A little bit of Davy Jones at first. You know, characters where it's just like you don't know where they're coming from, but they have this aura of terror around them. So you need to go one way or the other. You can't go mm-hmm. down the empathy, but you're not really developed, which is pretty much what they did here.
Yeah.
So, anyways, you're right. Sonny Birch is disappointing, mm-hmm. among many things in this movie, but he's another one.
Mm-hmm.
Other things, broad things, that you feel like they could have really improved on?
Broad things. I don't know. I'm trying to think, because they did try for some things. Like, obviously, they tried to give some emotional, like, weight to Janet Van Dyne's character, like, through flashbacks uh-huh. and such. I didn't feel right. absolutely invested in her survival. I mean, you saw why. I mean, she was, I guess, the story goal, so it's like, okay, they're trying to save her, so it's like, you do root for her in that regard.
Well, so here's the thing, right? Janet Van Dyne, let's just say everything that they said was correct, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is going to sound heartless, I think, a little bit, but I still think the point proves true.
Mm-hmm.
Janet Van Dyne, as a character, let's just say there's this whole thing where it's like, okay, you have to be here at this certain right time or whatever, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we're not going to be able to get to her for like a decade or 100 years or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say they miss that window. What happens? Janet Van Dyne continues to do what she has been doing for at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting in the quantum realm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at the end of the day, nothing truly terrible happens.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, honestly, she doesn't, nothing bad happens to her. She's stuck in the quantum realm like she's yeah. been for years mm-hmm. and years and years, and she's got along just fine.
Mm-hmm. There's like no like risk to losing her, more or less. It's not like she's gonna die, or like there's no like imminent threat to her, as far as you know. Like,
right.
We're not given reason to be worried for her safety.
Right. The quantum realm is not gonna explode or something like that. She'll still be there.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Like, will they see her for another 10 years? No, probably not. But they didn't emphasize how that needs to happen now.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Another kind of whoop-de-doo situation mm-hmm. wasn't compelling.
Yeah. The other broad thing I can think of is Hank Pym's relationship. Like, they keep touching on this throughout the movies. Hank Pym's past relationship with other people, other scientists. Like, saying he uh-huh. was this arrogant person or whatever. And it's like, I don't know. And it's like, there's like, they almost seem to verify that, but at the same time deny it, where it's like, Hank Pym is like, he stole things, like he was, like he would accuse some of the people who they said he betrayed, like they did this or they did that, like they stole from me or they did, like they were trying to
right.
steal my research. And it's like, well, those are legitimate concerns as a scientist. Like, you don't want someone taking your hard work and claiming it as their own. Like, you want, right. So it's like, it was like this very mixed thing. Like they couldn't figure out, I don't know if this is a story or just like, they're just trying to show, there was never really a settled consensus on whether he did bad or not, I guess. It's like, they just played around with that. At the end, he kind of apologizes, like, oh, is he actually in the wrong then? Or just...
Yeah, I could see that.
I mean, it wasn't a big deal in the movie, but it was one of those things I noticed. I was like, well, you didn't really come up with a solid opinion on this. And of course, it didn't help. Lawrence Fishburne, Dr. Bill Foster, his acting didn't help for this particular role because it didn't seem like he actually hated him. So he was, as you said, he was cordial. So I was like, it just left confusion as to what really happened in the past. So it didn't develop his character. It just left confusion to Hank Pym's character, if anything. So
Well, and that could have even been more interesting of a thing, right? If they have driven home, oh my goodness, Hank Pym's a scummy scientist, right? Who's really just vengeful, hates people, drives home whatever he wants, destroys the names of people that he doesn't like, you know, destroyed people's lives. Like, that could have really, I think, added an interesting aspect to the movie. You know, all of a sudden, this guy that we think is a good guy really isn't a good guy, you know, and can the other heroes trust him? We don't know. Really could have added that uncertainty. But when, when Foster's character is pretty dismissive of that point that he makes, do we really care? Not really. I mean, other than that, for me... there's been a lot on this movie, right? If we haven't hit on this enough, this is a lower point for some of those Marvel movies from Disney. Not even talking about the other ones, but just this one alone, not great.
I think in regards to movies, the Marvel movies, like this is the movie that my opinion of Marvel started to go down, I think. Like, I was kind of okay. Kind of the Marvel fanboy for a lot of it. But I think when this movie came out was when actually started to be the down, like, my downward opinion started to hit. It was like, okay, this wasn't a good entry. This could have been done way better. And it's why I hated the first time I watched it. So, and I didn't want to watch it again until you recommended it. Then we watched it. Then I watched it a second time. It's like, oh, well, this movie wasn't as bad as I remember, but it's still not a great movie.
Definitely. So. I mean, other than what we've talked about so far, I mean, there's a lot of things that don't feel amazing about this movie. I just think it's the last thing I want to emphasize is that the conflict felt forced in a lot of situations. For example, Janet Van Dyne explaining the time crunch that they don't have, you know, like enough time to save her, and they need. Before it's going to be X amount of time before they have another opportunity like this. I get that they were trying to take a complicated idea and make it a conflict. But it almost just added more confusion, and it felt kind of like they were just trying to force a time crunch in there when it didn't need to be. It didn't feel genuine. And maybe that's more of that show don't tell. If you can show in some way, like the time bomb, you know, ticking where you can see the time counting down, that's some of that showing that there's a time crunch rather than just telling you, oh, there's a time crunch like they did in this movie. Some of that would have been better in this movie. And then just the deus ex machina at the end. Like... that, like, why are we doing this? Why is it like, oh, never mind, let's just make everything okay. Okay, we can save the mom and have the cake too, right? We can heal the lady, we can do whatever we want. Never mind. We can do however we want to do things, we can just make it work out. Really just pulling that out of their hat was just showed that there was no sacrifice in this movie. And for that reason, I'm out.
Ah, So do we even have to do a rating now at this point?
We do. We have to. We have to create that baseline.
I mean, you. I know you want to give this movie a negative five or something, but...
Hey, you first. Go ahead. Throw it at me. I know you'll give it more love.
I'll give it... Actually, I'm going to give this movie a 4.5.
Shame.
No. All things considered, like, it's not the, like, and maybe it's because the second or third time movie, I was a little bit more forgiving with it than the first time. But it's just like, I don't see it as the worst movie ever. Like, it was like, okay, there were some fun things in this movie that I enjoyed. I mean, most of it was VFX and the shrinking, growing stuff of the movie.
Okay.
But, okay. So, I mean, I can enjoy that. I can enjoy, like, some of those special effects and the comedy in the movie. Some of it is funny. It's just, like, the storyline itself was not well structured. It was not well done. It should have been condensed more. Like, there's too many conflicts. You should have cut off a few, condensed the necessary elements into this movie that you wanted there. Like, they could have done that. But I think they were so intent on bringing certain elements into it that it was just like, okay. It just is a shame. It could have been better, but it's what we got. Yes. So it's 4.5. I'll say 4.25 or 4.25.
4.25. Yeah. Hey, that's a big, that's a lot closer a step for me to what I think it deserves. I can't say it's the worst movie I've ever watched. Okay. There were some things that were funny about it. Some things that harked, that pointed back to the old movie, right? Mm-hmm. Harken back, whatever you want to say. Yeah. But I will never on my own ever choose to watch this movie again. I'll give this one a solid 3.2. Okay?
Okay.
Not the worst movie. Genuinely not. Mm-hmm. But also genuinely a terrible movie. Please do not put this as your top 10. Please do not choose this as a favorite movie. If you're doing that,
you've lost.
You need to watch a lot more movies, okay? please.
Like, must be nice staying home all the time. Yeah. It's like, it's almost like, what rock did you crawl out from under?
Exactly. The only situation I think this is good is you've watched all your good movies, run out of those, and watch like 50 bad movies in a row. And then you watch this, right? There you go. Then you think this is great. Yeah. No. Please don't. Mm-hmm. Watch. There's so many good movies out there. Just watch one of those. Please. Mm-hmm. And that's all I have to say.
Price Hack of the Pants 2 would be better.
My goodness. Yeah. Wherever you are at, Nova, I hope you're listening to this. That's it. That's all we got. That's what we got for you.
And happy anniversary.
Yeah, it's true. Like, happy anniversary. Here we are. Hope you all enjoy. We will be back next time.
If you have a movie you want reviewed or have some feedback to give us, send us a message at alostplot.com. If you like this podcast, please leave us a review. It really helps other people find our podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode and look forward to seeing you back with us next time. See you then.